Yeah, and in fact, if we just go through the ones that are in the outline, it might be helpful to see the pattern. The first one, and we've been talking about offering sacrifices, and you know, so that one's pretty much covered. We talked about not offering something that doesn't cost us anything. We talked about who is the subject of the sacrifice. We talked about, and it was just mentioned just now, the consecration is, it's about waking every morning to realize I offer myself. That's the New Testament equivalent of this offering. In the old way, they offered sacrifices. They were killed. They were dead because it was for the reminder of our condition before a holy God. Well, the New Testament corollary for that is we wake every morning, and to use the illustration, and what it is our lives. Romans 12 is that we offer ourselves as living sacrifices. That it's waking with the consciousness that, it's, again, it's that which pertains to God. I've been purchased, I've been bought, I am His. It's my reasonable service. It's the logical thing for me to follow through on, is that my body is laid on that before God for Him to use in whatever way. It's waking up with that consciousness that I yield, I mine out something to gain something of who Christ is as well, in order that I might have something to express in the fruit of my lips, giving thanks or confessing His name. So in terms of the contrast, they were offerers. The old, you know, the priests always brought an offering. And it's a variety of types for different conditions. We have ourselves to bring. We have all the virtues and all the features of the Lord Jesus Christ to be as part of our offering. That was the first one. And the second one, which is an interesting one, which, again, this could be, you know, we subject to instruction and help. We had this recently about Ezra, who was the priest, who was a teaching priest. And then there's the reference in 2 Chronicles 15:3, where there says there was no teaching priest in Israel. What a sad condition. The priest, in Leviticus, I think it's 10, was to teach the people the law of the Lord. And so what's a New Testament priestly activity that would sort of correspond to that? Colossians 1:16, where we're encouraged to teach one another. It says, teaching and admonishing one another, and it tells us how to do it with psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Is that we understand the relationship, that we are one of a collection. You know, this idea in Western thought of rugged individualism and independence is a terrible thing. But here, you know, there was no teaching priest in Israel. And Ezra then desired to instruct the people. He was a priest who inspired to instruct and teach. A New Testament priestly activity is to be so engaged and so involved in one another's lives that we are seeking to help and to teach and to admonish. And to do it in a way that is, it's interesting in Colossians the way that is worded. Yeah, it's chapter 3, yeah, sorry, yeah. It's wrong on the outline. It's 3:16. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom. And again, it's almost like the Spirit of God is repeating the things that we've had all through the day, are taken in of more of who Christ is as he instructs us. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another. There is this idea that we are this collective, one of many. Teaching and admonishing one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. It's this collective realization that we're in this together. We're moving in the same direction. We're all concerned with the things that pertain to God. We're all interested in drawing near to God. And so some priestly, you know, activity is this idea of really being involved in one another's lives to teach and admonish in a way that is acceptable. You know, sometimes we teach and admonish with a hammer. You know, he says here with hymns and spiritual songs in a way that appeals to the greater sensibilities, those things that move us. There's nothing like a hymn and a spiritual song that actually moves us beyond just the words. It's because of the way those words are put together. In the third case, in 2 Chronicles 31:2, it talks about the priest that, and it was mentioned already, evening and morning, and tied to this idea of to sing and to give thanks, to pray and to give thanks. I think it's give thanks and praise. Sorry, that was a priestly activity where they got together and they confessed, they spoke out, and gave thanks to Jehovah and praised Jehovah. That was a priestly activity. It corresponds to what we've had already. But I was thinking about, you know, we talked about the priest in the sense of an intercessor and a mediator. So a priestly activity is this idea of prayer, of praying one for another. And then not only just praying one for another, but praying as Paul exhorts Timothy, I would that men lift up holy hands, praying, making intercession and thanksgivings, not only for within, but even for those that are without.
Kings
and governors, yeah. And so another priestly activity is engaging in prayer, but not only individual prayer. Collective prayer. And it's always fascinating how this always comes around again. You know, what's the most neglected collection of believers getting together? The prayer meeting, right? And so it's priestly services that I think we can see them illustrated in some of the priestly activities of the Aaronic priesthood. And I think we can draw parallels in the New Testament. I gave three examples, and so there might be more.